The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to the K. Four wins. The first, Tuesday of, no, this is the first Tuesday of 2026, right, guys? Kip Keeper right below me, the executive director of the Birmingham Race Course and Casino here in Birmingham to my left or your left, depending on how you're looking at our stage. Case Keeper, who is the chief editor of the Las Vegas Sun. A little under the weather, but he is a player, man. He plays hurt. I love that. And also, of course, right above him is Kai Gregory, a guy who's been handicapping his entire life and knows exactly what we're talking about when we're talking about football. We got a ton of it here, baby. We got, of course, the Final Four, Miami, Ole Miss, Oregon, Indiana, going off on Thursday and Friday, 6:30 respectively. And then, of course, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. It is a wild card weekend, and we were talking right before the show. It is just an absolute plethora of 3.5s, 3s, 2.5s, maybe a 4. There's a 10 in there, but man, the handicapping lines are super small. Before we go anywhere, though, there has been a death in the K4 family. Pete Carroll has been relieved of his duties with the Las Vegas Squad
Raiders.
Yeah, I'm heart wrenched.
I know you're really having trouble getting the words out.
Well, this tells me. Forgive me if I'm wrong. In case you are the man, you're the reporter for the Las Vegas Raiders. Was this a one and done deal? Like you got to win right now, or you're done, or what happened here?
No, not at all. That's actually a really. And first of all, I didn't know where you were going with that. I was about to feel less sad. I was like, man, yeah. who died? But you know, it just. I mean, clearly it is a one and done. He's fired, but that was never the that was never the intent. And I think that. I kind of wrote about this today, but from the very opening press conference, you could just see red flags. I think it's something I probably talked about on this show. I talked about a lot of shows that it just did not match up. The Raiders needed a full rebuild. Pete Carroll's the oldest coach in NFL history. He's not going to want to wait around and try to develop young players and do the things that set a foundation. He wanted to win right away. So even the very first press conference, he comes in and says, "We're going to win right away. I've won everywhere I've been. I have the formula, blah, blah, blah." Then Mark Davis, the owner, talks afterwards and says, we haven't given any mandate. We want to build this the right way. We want to do it brick by brick. You know, they had 11 draft picks, play a lot of young guys. Then we get into the season, and clearly Pete Carroll's way won out. It was his show. He was the guy running everything, which is another thing that's outdated in the NFL. Now, no one basically controls personnel and the team, and Carroll kind of wrested control of everything. And then we barely even saw any rookies play. He signed all these old Seahawks, had all these veterans, and just, I mean, even if it's his time at the end of the Seahawks, I think one thing from covering the NFL and being around it, not just from a betting perspective, but, you know, the actual game the last 5 years that I've realized that I think goes, a lot of people don't, is just how fast the league moves and how much things are progressing. And like an average defense today looks nothing like it did even 5 years ago, let alone 15 years ago when Pete Carroll put in his current defense. But he overruled Patrick Graham, put in the defense he wanted, the defense he was comfortable with in Seattle. Offensively, it was kind of a mandate by Tom Brady that like Chip Kelly was going to have the reins early. But then when the offense wasn't good at the beginning, Pete Carroll started doing what he wanted to do on offense. He just had his hands in way too many things. And it was all with this idea that I can win 10 games wherever I go. I'm Pete Carroll. And that was not the mentality the Raiders needed this year. They needed to say, we might take our lumps, but maybe we can go around 500, play a lot of young guys. They never even started developing guys till late in the year. So it was just a bad match. They were close to getting Ben Johnson. I know a lot of people look back and laugh and say that's ridiculous. He was always going to Chicago. But there were only two teams he talked to, Chicago and Las Vegas. I think there was a lot of things he liked about here. I think he was really drawn to Tom Brady, drawn to their facilities, all the money they had. But I think ultimately he went to Chicago because of Caleb Williams, which I don't begrudge him at all. I think it was the right choice. It'd be interesting if he was in the situation this year and the Raiders had the number one pick. But when they lost out on Ben Johnson, it was kind of a scramble. Liam Cohen told him that he didn't want to interview with him. So then they just kind of, gave it to Pete Carroll without a whole lot of thought of how it was going to look. And it just was not a good match. So I know it's easy to make fun of the Raiders, 4 coaches in 4 years now, but there was no reason to run this back. It just, like I said, the two philosophies did not mesh.
Now, Pete Carroll is, he's a Hall of Famer. Is he done, first of all? And second of all, where do the Raiders go with their first pick?
I think he's done. I can't imagine someone else giving him a shot after how poorly this went. You never know. I mean, crazy things happen all the time.
Bengals will take him.
Yeah, because Kai's team's wanting to hire Raheem Morris. That would be a brilliant move.
Wow.
The Raiders are picking Fernando Mendoza or Dante Moore. I'd say, you know, a lot can change with two more games. Right now, I'd say it's probably about 75% Mendoza. I think John Spytek, the general manager, talked to us yesterday. We asked something about the first pick, not even position, even slipped out of his mouth. Well, a quarterback can really change everything. I think it's no secret. They're going to take a quarterback. I mean, you listen to the draft guys, and they say next year could be an even better quarterback class. So I think they're, you know, if you're acting totally optimally, I think you're open to trading out of the first pick and getting a haul like Chicago did from Carolina when they got like three first-round picks. But at the same time, the Raiders have been so bad for 20 years. The fan base is so starved for something to latch onto. I think there would be a riot if they did that, even though I think there is merit to it. I think they're going to go quarterback and most likely Mendoza, but I think Moore can play his way into it between these last two games. I did find it interesting. I think Todd McShay had a report yesterday that Dante Moore's people might reach out to the Raiders and say, hey, does he have any chance of going number one? As if he does, he will go. But if not, he'll be back at Oregon because according to McShay, no one wants to be on the Jets and the Jets pick number two.
Wow.
So if that's true, that's
Rams, Panthers, Green Bay, Chicago again, Bills, Jags, very interesting. San Francisco Eagles, we got the Chargers, New England, and the Houston Texans and the Steelers. We'll get into the NFL a little bit later on. I want to go to Kai real quick. And what's a better shot of happening in our college playoff? Both favorites winning or both dogs winning?
favorites. I don't know. 50-50. I mean, I like Miami. I like them at three. I don't necessarily like them as much at four, but I also just don't think Trinidad Chambliss can have the game that he had last time. I mean, he's going to have to play perfect for them to have a shot against Miami, in my opinion. But then again, now I'm sitting here wanting to bet my money on Carson Beck, and that's not a great thought in the back of my head either. And Oregon and Indiana, wow! I mean, this is clearly Kip's dream semifinal matchup for two Big Ten teams. Making sure a Big Ten team is in the final, I know that he is 1,000% excited to watch this game.
Well, we got a chance to have an SEC Big Ten national title. That'd be fun.
That'd be good. At least Ohio State's out, so I'm not apoplectic about this. Oregon's in the Big Ten by name only, but I don't still consider them a Big Ten team, even though that's where they're listed.
That is true. Miami's given up 3.5. It's down to 3 and 50. 1.5. It's up to 52.5. And the Indiana Oregon line has gone from 4 to 3.5, and the over under right around 46. Yeah, but we kid about the Big Ten, and obviously they're having a hell of a season because they got half the teams in the Final Four. What does, now that we know, I mean, Indiana's not surprising anybody. They are for real, believe it or not. They're favored by 4 over what I think is probably one of the best team in college football in Oregon if Dante Moore is on his toes.
But let me ask you a question, Tony. Was Indiana that great like everybody thinks, or was Alabama just that stinking bad?
I think a little bit of both. I think a little bit of both. I really do. But the thing that's surprising about Alabama is to see how they played against Georgia and to see them play like that again. That's the part to me that's heart-wrenching, to see how bad they looked in the SEC championship game and then to back it up with a performance like they had
and
in
they
that
just
game
quit.
Was just unbelievable.
Let's call it what it is. No, okay, let me say
and
this.
I got news for you. Indiana Nick Saban teams would have never quit. I'm just telling you right now, you can say
no,
whatever
they,
you want.
No, they wouldn't.
Nick Saban's teams would have never quit. They would have never lost by 30-something points.
Let me say this, because, yeah, I don't like the Big Ten, and I think they play half their games are just an absolute joke. But on the other hand, Indiana executes what they want to do better than any team I've seen this year. I'm going to go ahead and say, because I'm getting painted as completely blind to what's going on,
no,
and that's
you know
not
what's,
what's happening.
No.
Not at all. You just have your views on the Big Ten. I don't think you're blind at all.
No.
Well, that's debatable.
There's a lot of people feel the same way, yeah.
Yeah, but that, let me just say, what Indiana did is they got off the bus and they did exactly what they came there to do and executed brilliantly, and they do it as well as anybody with the pieces they have, and they are something that I always admire is they are not so much individually great, they are just a very, very high-level, functioning, efficient a team that's actually, from a football X's and O's standpoint, a joy to watch. So I grudgingly concede that Indiana, despite the fact that they had a cream puff schedule, is playing as well as a team as any college team I've seen in the last couple of years. That being said, you know, this is a rematch. The Oregon-Indiana game was competitive out in Eugene earlier in the year. Oregon's got a lot of their pieces back. Oregon's got speed just on top of speed. I'm really actually looking forward to watching this Big Ten matchup because I have admiration for what both these guys have accomplished with their teams. And Dan Lanning's still kind of our guy in the SEC. He started at Alabama. He really cut his teeth at Georgia. So, Dan's kind of been derisive of the SEC this year just because he's a company man in the Big Ten now, but I'm still a Dan Lanning fan.
You mentioned all four coaches in the Final Four have some tie to Nick Saban, and yes, we know
all four
we know that Nick Saban's not coaching anymore, but Nick Saban is God, and we will continue to talk about him as long as we possibly can while he's still alive, Guy. We're going to do that. I will say this about Indiana, and this guy to the bottom left-hand corner has been on Indiana all year long. If you watch the show, you've had futures on Indiana, you've done everything, you've done, hit Mendoza, the whole nine yards. They don't make mistakes. They don't play like a team that we're so used to Indiana being like. Now, we had to remember, too, Indiana was really good last year. I mean, this was a good football team. So they're backing up this year with a lot of guys that came back, obviously. They missed the ring last year, so they're coming back for some more. But they don't turn the football over. They don't make mistakes. They don't get penalized a lot. And like you said, they just just are very efficient. It almost pisses you off how efficient they are. They don't make mistakes. They play in front of the chains. They just do the things that they need to do. Everyone kind of plays in there. It's like the Nick Saban thing. Win your box. And I think from a team concept, Kip, I totally agree with you. Case, what's your thoughts? And you've obviously, no one's being scared now by the Indiana line. I mean, they're favored by four over a very good Oregon squad.
Yeah, I will say the only thing I can't take credit for, I was a little bit of a late adopter of this Indiana team this year, starting Big Ten play, though. I mean, I came into the year, I bet them under. I love betting under on teams or, you know, programs that have like the best year in school history. And then we run it back in the betting market and say, okay, now just do it again. I'm telling you, like 90% of the time that doesn't happen, which to me makes it even more phenomenal what Indiana is doing. I really think this is like the best 5-year coaching stretch in maybe the history of college football, what Kurt Cignetti has done. People forget back at James Madison, they might have been the best group of five team their first year in FBS. They weren't even eligible for a bowl game. It just doesn't happen where you have this huge breakout year and you're just even better the next year. So I really didn't start thinking they were undervalued till they played Illinois, I think, was the first time I bet them. I bet them under, and then it really threw me off the scent when they didn't beat Old Dominion by that much. But as I've said a lot of times on this show now, it kind of became clear Old Dominion was really good this year as well. And then it's just been week after week. I guess to let you in my process a little bit to answer the question, it doesn't really come up on the show because usually we do it Tuesday. So I go through every box score really quickly, or not really quickly. I mean, it takes hours, but Saturday night, there's just certain things I'm looking at in every game. More analytical stuff, EPA, yards per play, turnovers, the more basic ones. So I just try to get a sense of how the game went, who deserved to win, who didn't. Then I make a real preliminary number so I can hit the openers. Then I come back on Monday and put everything in and get my real strong number that I'm basically working off the whole week. So then by Tuesday, when we usually do the show, I'm like 100% sure these are the sides I like. This is what the number should be. So it's been a little bit different in the playoffs. I think our last show was right after the playoff games.
Mm-hmm. It was the morning after.
The first part of the process where I just looked at the few things in the box score, put the preliminary number. And I think I talked last week about how I thought it was short on Indiana. Again, this literally happened like 10 weeks in a row. I put the first number on Indiana and I'm like, betting market still doesn't respect him. I guess I'm betting him again. But now in that interim, I've done a little more deep dive and I've already bet Indiana, so I'm not going to get off on it. But when I actually put my steadfast hard number on this, I only came out with Indiana -3. So as of right now, if you're asking me who I want to make a bet on, I'm really conflicted because I'm not going to buy off of it. I'm going to let the Indiana -3.5 run. But I think maybe we finally have caught up. I think Oregon was maybe more dominant in that Texas Tech game than I gave them credit. I looked at it. I think they were +3 in turnovers, including an interception in the end zone. But, man, they just let Texas Tech do nothing. I really think this Oregon team's better than when they played Indiana earlier. They were 7.5-point favorite in that game. We forget. So a huge flip. So I think maybe we finally have caught up to Indiana now. I think this is going to be a great game. I can really see it going either way. And I might have sounded pretty convicted on Indiana a week ago. And I hate to do this. I hate to flip-flop. But this is just the truth of how I do my process. But yeah. Now I'm like, I really don't know what I think about this game.
Kip, what's a better story, Miami or Ole Miss this year?
Well, Ole Miss just because of Trinidad Chambliss. But they're both great stories because it's renewal for Carson Beck, who's a guy who's a career record. He's only lost like five starts in like 50 games. But some really interesting aspects of this thing. Chambliss is like Roy Hobbs and the Natural. You know, this guy should not be, you know, crushing the scoreboard and knocking out lights and knocking the cover off the ball, but week after week he does it. But the compelling quarterback matchup here is really fascinating. You know, Carson Beck has had two horrendous games in his career as a college quarterback. Two just god awful. Got to forget about that. One of them was last year at Oxford against Ole Miss. He was brutal in that game. Georgia got stomped by the Rebels in 2024. Beck threw three bad picks and they dropped two other ones. And the other one was this year against Louisville, where he actually threw five interceptions, only got credit for four because he got a really bad roughing the passer call that bailed him out of one of them. But the bottom line is, I've got memories of that Ole Miss game. Pete Golding, you know, we've been making fun of Pete Golding for weeks. Pete Golding to the rescue. Well, now Pete Golding is trying to knock Miami off. And he devised a defense that completely took Carson Beck away in that Georgia game last year in Oxford. So interesting aspects there. I think Ole Miss is the more compelling story, also because the Lane Kiffin nonsense. Yeah. I mean, for this team, and I guess you could have seen it coming, where this team as players would have had one or two reactions. They could have reacted negatively to all the BS that was going on with Kiffin as they were in a stretch drive for a playoff spot and a chance. And, you know, it amazes me, and I won't ramble on too much longer, but it amazes me that so much of the national media and the experts and all the people that are around college football, well, Lane Kiffin has to do this because he's got a lot better chance to win a national championship at LSU than Ole Miss. And I was just screaming from the mountaintops, this team he's got right now is maybe going to be his best chance to ever win a national championship. This is the most explosive team in the entire tournament. This has got a magical quarterback in Trinidad Chambliss. They've got weapons on offense. Lacy, good job, Coach Drink. You didn't play Lacy last year at Missouri. And what a gift to Ole Miss to get a running back that runs for, you know, a gazillion yards. They've got talented receivers. Their defense has been questionable, and that's been their Achilles heel. But the defense they played against Georgia the second time as compared to the first time, completely different. I think this team is still a threat to win the whole thing, and a lot of people would kind of scoff at that. Oh, Indiana's going to crush them, or Oregon's got too much speed. But Ole Miss is just one of those magical sports stories, and give Miami credit. We've said all along, they have, from a roster standpoint, as good a team as anybody in the country, but I'm not getting off the Cinderella story. Ole Miss is one of those things they're going to be writing books and making movies about for years to come.
Well, Lacy could be that piece too. He's the one guy no one's been talking about until this playoff run, and obviously every time I think of Lacy, I think of Eddie, but man, he's just knocking it out. I mean, he's been
Eddie
there.
Eddie made
there,
two of the biggest plays in that game in the passing game.
Yes, he did.
That ridiculous scramble that Chambliss ran a half marathon before throwing it, and threw it down the field to Lacy. So you don't get a lot of backs in college that, I mean, he already plays like a top line professional back.
All four teams have winning records against the spread. That's the first time that's ever happened in playoff football. And of course, we also have the Miami Hurricanes, who are 9-2 against the spread going into this game, giving up 3.5 Ole Miss. The man who knows all about the totals, though, I love to get team totals, halftime lines, and everything else. That's Kai Gregory. What's your thoughts on these over unders? 51.5, now 52.5, and 46.
Kai Gregory, the total.
Kai, He is the total package. There you go. He is the total package. Yes.
I'm good at the misnomers.
You really are. What do you think about? Go ahead.
Before we move forward, because this has been bugging me for 20 minutes. What the hell is on your shirt, Case?
What is it? Just a band shirt.
Okay. I was looking at it and I was like, what in the world is that? It's one of those things, you know.
What Kai was really doing was looking at it and going, is that a college shirt? Can we bet on that team? Last night on the K4 list, we had Rio Grande. Yeah. And I said, are we betting high school games now? I have never heard of Rio Grande University, college, you know, school for girls, whatever they are. So I think Kai was wanting to bet on whoever's on your shirt.
Well, just for the record, Rio Grande was +2 at home and won the game straight up.
There you
go. I'm sad to say I know their mascot and they're in the Southland Conference, the Vaqueros, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
I love looking at the lower conferences, getting really involved in basketball in the KenPom and going more through, you know, a lot of people look at the KenPom ratings and they'll go, okay, well, so-and-so is number one in KenPom, and that's all they look at. And they're playing number 92 in KenPom. There's always, well, there's about 800 things you can look at in the KenPom ratings that you need to look at besides just the number beside them. You know, it's not like some of the other things. I mean, there's people don't understand, and it's, I think it's $29.99 for a year to get the full look in there, and you can see so many things. I mean, home court, stat efficiency, you know, who shoots threes, what they're shooting, their
wow.
perimeter defense, their inside defense, rebounds, offense rebounds, defense rebounds. I mean, just tempo, which is huge, especially when you're looking at totals.
Stop by K4 Wins first. Stop by K4 Wins first, and then you can look at Palms.
Yeah, and this is why, by the way. What we just heard, this is why Kai Gregory is the total package.
Yeah, he really is.
This is a really good conversation that can really help people because, I don't know if people know how to use KenPom correct, but it's great data. I've been, you know, betting off KenPom since I was like 20 years. I was like 2006 when they were paid. But yeah, some of the best things to look at because there's so much it can be overwhelming. Kai mentioned tempo. I think tempo is really important. I think one thing the betting market gets wrong is just when it's a high scoring game, a better chance for the more possessions, better chance for the favorite to pull away. Tempo is important. The new stat he just put up, I think in the last 2 weeks, 2-point distance. I think it's huge. I want to see where you're getting your 2-pointers from. The closer to the rim, obviously better both offense and defense. Rebounding percentage, especially offensive rebounding percentage, is extremely valuable. Offensive rebounding percentage is going to be the best evaluator of how good you are rebounding-wise. And probably the single biggest one to me, especially maybe not with the really poor teams like in the Southland, like Rio Grande, but if it's teams that are somewhat equal skill sets, like now that we're in conference play, I want to see 3-point percentage defense because that is the most random thing in all of basketball. There have been studies upon studies that show, like, if another team's hitting their 3-pointers, a lot of times it's totally random. So if you see a team that's like, if like an SEC team's 303-point defense, that's almost surely going to regress as the season goes on, and it is just bad luck to this point.
All right, take that, Vissen. No, this information is not on VISN today.
We hope it will be. The luck and the adjustment in there.
The luck's good too.
Going in and looking at the strength of schedule adjustments, which, I mean, you've got teams that are 15-0, but their strength of schedule's 347. And, you know, they're ranked number 19 in KenPom, and it's like, okay, well, they can play the number 150 team in KenPom. Their strength of schedule adjustment, you look it up that, and it's in the top 50, and you're like, hold on just a second here. Yeah. And this will give you reasons like why Florida is a 9-point favorite over Georgia, who's in the top 25, and Florida's not. But Florida's at home court advantage, those kind of things.
Great site, but not the best interview. I'll just say that. We had Ken on our show on the opening drive many times, and he's a one-word answer. You better be loaded with lots of questions for Ken Palm. He does not want to discuss any debatable things. He's all numbers, man. He's all numbers. He's like, what does the number say? So that's that. But give me the numbers on this over-unders for, of course, the big college games coming up here.
You know, if I really believe, I mean, because Miami's team total is 27.5, Ole Miss is 24.5, Oregon's 21.5, Indiana's 24.5. If this game gets to that total of 52, then I think Ole Miss is really, really, really in the game. If there's more than 35 points scored in this game, Ole Miss has a chance, without a shadow of a doubt. I like what Miami's defense has been doing thus far. And holding Ohio State to 14 points, in my opinion, is not a huge deal. Ohio State's offense, to me, has not been impressive.
They only got 10 against Indiana. Yeah,
it has been much better. So I'm iffy in that. I want to lay the points with Miami. But I kind of, you know, my heart wants to see Ole Miss win just because Kiffin bailed on him the way he did, even though all the reports are coming out that looks like it was maybe the Ole Miss administration's fault that he had to leave. But, I mean, personally, I would not have let him stay in coach. I would not have done that, knowing that he is the portal king. Although, if you look at the portal right now, he's kind of getting destroyed, 4 days in. But if you're gonna bet Ole Miss, you've got to bet them over their team total. I don't think Ole Miss is gonna hold Miami under 24 points. And if they do, they've got to score more points to win. The Oregon Indiana game, you know, it was 30-20 in Oregon. Like with the turnovers, with the movement, I think Deontay Moore, I believe it or not, I think he's playing better now than he was then. And I like Mendoza the way he is. I think both of those teams, even how good Indiana's defense is playing with their DN, their best defensive player out, I've got to go over in that game both ways.
It does always come down, it seems, to great quarterback play. And, of course, all four quarterbacks are getting after it as well. We got some pro action to get into in just a few minutes here. We'll talk about that. So everybody give me a two-team parlay. You can use over-unders if you want. Kip, give me your two-team parlay coming up for the games coming up on Thursday and Friday at 6:30, because the next time we do a show, we'll have a winner on Thursday night, but we won't know on Friday yet. But give me your two-team parlay for this weekend.
Two-team parlay. I did really well with that on the contest this year on the starting lineup. I think I went 0-2 about 80% of the time. So I just off the top of my head, I think Ole Miss scores points in that game, and, you know, I love what Miami's done, but I just think that's the story, and the story often prevails. I'll take Ole Miss, in the other game, I'll go with the double O's, Oregon Ole Miss.
Oregon Ole Miss. Case, what you like?
I love it because I've probably heard before the show 25 people pick the championship game, and I swear 24 of them have had Miami, Indiana, including me. That was my first reaction. I heard one other person pick Oregon. Now Kip on the opposite side of both. Nice. Number one, I would never bet a parlay, so especially in this situation, so I'm going to pass.
For sake of the show, just give me a winner on both sides, and we'll parlay them for you.
It's so hard to – I am so conflicted on the Ole Miss-Miami game. Like, I bet under 52.5. The over's kind of taking some money now.
Wow, and you don't play over-unders.
In the playoff, I try to put the rules off.
Okay.
Of them. So I've been playing them a little bit in the playoff. Okay. During the regular season, though, it's too much work with 60 games a week. I don't feel confident enough that I can put a number on all of them. But yeah, I have been playing them in the playoffs. I bet under and open on that. I still kind of like it. My first reaction was Miami, but I got to say, and I know no one likes to hear this because it's a good story, or whatever, but Miami's offense has been pretty bad in the playoffs so far. And I know you gotta consider the competition, obviously. Ohio State's defense is pretty incredible. Texas A&M, that game had like 30-mile-per-hour winds, but they came up with huge drives in both games when it mattered, and then they had one other good drive against Ohio State. But I feel like because of that, it's kind of shrouded just how – I mean, that's like 3 out of 17 possessions – they've looked good, and the other ones they've done absolutely nothing. So their offense kind of scares me. When Kip's earlier thing about Ole Miss, I completely agreed with one part of it and completely disagreed with the other. First of all, I think he definitely deserves credit because he was, you know, higher on Ole Miss certainly than me and probably all of us. And I do think that's proven to be right. And it's I'm holding an Ole Miss 80-1 national championship ticket. It was the first bet.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah.
I still wasn't that high on the team once we got into the season. Just I feel like they've gotten lucky quite a bit. If there was a KenPom luck rating for football, I feel like they'd be first or second because they've snuck out a lot of these games.
But that's just part of being the Cinderella story.
But I think he mentioned the key word is just explosion. It's hard to balance. Like, they have more explosive play ability than anyone left and just about anyone in the nation. It's just hard to trust. I don't trust them necessarily consistently on a drive-to-drive basis, but I do think they have the chance to just hit explosive plays at any time and make a difference. I can't believe it lived long enough. What's the saying? He's turned from villain to hero. I used to hate Kiffin more than anything, and now I kind of find myself defending him more than anything, because I guess I am part of Kip's idiots, because I definitely said that, and I still totally agree. I think maybe why he fought to stay so hard this year is he did feel like this year's Ole Miss team could win a championship, but But I just totally disagree that long term, I think you have a way better chance of winning a national championship at LSU. I mean, just look over the last 40 years, the type of players LSU's been able to get compared to Ole Miss. Oh. And if you talk in football circles, everyone really says there's only two teams, even in the SEC, where money is no object. Every single year, you're going to have the war chest to get whatever team you want. That's LSU and Texas. I mean, we've even heard Kirby complain about the resources Georgia has available. We've heard Alabama now is kind of falling back in the pack as far as money. I think Kiffin was conflicted because, yeah, this year, maybe even next year, Ole Miss is right there. But I feel like at LSU, if you can stick there, you're going to have year after year, you're going to be able to get whatever team you want. So I really do think long term he has a better chance of winning a championship.
What's hilarious about that is the last three LSU coaches did win national titles, and Brian Kelly goes down there and lays an egg. The one guy who everyone thought was probably the best coach out of those last three.
And let me clarify, my point was he's got a team right now that may be his best chance ever to win a championship. This team can win the championship. You know, of
you
course,
are right about that, 100%. I give you credit for that. Yeah, but I still get what he was thinking long-term.
Yeah, yeah. Any logical person will say, sure, LSU's a much more proven commodity. There's no debate about that. LSU has, you know, if you win a national championship with Les Miles and Ed Ogeron, that's a hell of a situation to be in.
Yeah,
and I get that, but I'm just, my point was that, you know, he's got a team right now. And I'm not so sure with him even, and this is going to sound ridiculous, but I think Lane Kiffin's main motivation is to be front and center in the spotlight all the time. I don't think this move was made based on his desire to win a national championship. He might get bored there in 2 years and they offer him the head coaching job with the Dallas Cowboys and he'll be gone like the wind. So I don't know. I think Kiffin's motivation is different than other people. Everybody said, well, his dream is to win a national championship. Well, I've never heard him say that. I think his dream is to be the most talked about, most in the spotlight guy, and I think he's just a giant egomaniac, and that's what really drives him.
He has had
maybe the Raiders can bring him back, you know, 20 years
oh
later.
Oh, my God, no.
Oh, there you go.
Tony, you have
the Raider return tour.
Unfortunately for him, Mark Davis has carried on Al Davis's grudges. I would say it's possible since his problem was with Al, but Mark doesn't seem to be very forgiving either. Probably not going
to
happen.
He has had seven jobs in the last 18 years, so if you expect this LSU job to be something he's going to be stuck in with for a while, don't even think about it. Kip, what's your Kai, what's your parlay, your two-team parlay?
It's got to be from those two games, huh? I would go under 52.5 and Oregon over 21.5 team total.
All right, I like it. I think the Oregon-Indiana game is going to be really interesting, but I think much like the Tech-Sec game, I think they're going to feel each other out. I think it's going to be a defensive game. I'm going to go under 46.5, which is weird because I love playing overs, and I love playing overs when they're in the 40s. But I'm going to go under 46.5, and then I'm going to go Ole Miss, too, just because I think two teams are so evenly matched, and I think it's catching. If I can get it to four, I'm like an Ole Miss in that situation there, so that should be good. All right, let's talk some pro action here. For the first time in 50 years, this is happening in the National Football League. Anyone want to take a stab?
The first time in 50 years?
Mm-hmm.
Pete Carroll's not coaching?
That's a good answer.
Your top two Super Bowl favorites are from the same division. That's for the first time in 50 years. That'll be up beating Seattle and, of course, the Rams. Seattle plus 350, Rams plus 425, Denver plus 600, Bills 950, New England's 950 as well. And the crazy thing is I think I saw it on ESPN Analytics, Seattle's 60-1 to win the Super Bowl at the beginning of the season. Does it sound right, Case?
6,000? Yeah, that sounds about right. I don't have it in front of me, but yeah, definitely. Probably
that hadn't happened
a little bit better.
Yeah, that hadn't happened since like 2001, New England Patriots. I think they were like 50-1 or something like that and came out of nowhere and ended up winning. Of course, that was the beginning
and
of the
Super Bowl. They're plus 385 today. Is that right?
Yeah, I got 350. I'm sitting here looking at 350 right now. So they've come quite a long way, which is pretty amazing stuff. But man, what some great matchups. Rams, Panthers, Green Bay, Chicago, which is kind of like Duke, North Carolina. Every time they play each other, I find myself, I have to watch it. It's like the Yankees and the Bo Sox. I have to watch it. Bills, Jags, I want to start there. San Francisco, Eagles, Chargers, New England, and Houston. And, of course, the Steelers. By the way, we had a couple of plays that we were talking about. Some people were like, how'd your plays go on the Steelers? On that Ravens play, it looked like Derrick Henry was going to blow past that 29.5. He had 16 rushes at halftime. He got under it. All of a sudden, they just didn't use him anymore. I don't understand. They went 10 minutes.
They did on their last
They went 10 fucking minutes without using Derrick Henry, and the game was close. It was going back and forth. I'm like, what the hell are they doing? What's Harbaugh doing? The other one was, of course, Aaron Rodgers over the 231. He blew past that. He looked like the Aaron Rodgers of old, so we did hit that side. But, I could not understand what exactly – I don't know if it was a feeling or what it is, but Derrick Henry had over 100 yards for the third time this year in the first half, and they didn't hardly use him in the second half of that ballgame. I don't get it. I don't understand it.
He was tired.
You think? I mean, boy, and boy, his eyeballs, man. When they missed that play, it was unbelievable how big his eyeballs were. It was unbelievable.
Tale of two halves. Aaron Rodgers, you just said, looked like the Aaron Rodgers of old in the second half. In the first half, he just looked like old Aaron Rodgers.
Hey, when they went for it first and goal with 2 seconds left and didn't get it, and I knew they were getting the ball back to start the second half, I thought they were done. Because I thought, wow, this is an opportunity that they cannot miss out on. It ended up being 10-3 at halftime. But they came back and... What a great ball game. What a weird game, too, at the end of that game.
It was so bizarre.
Speaking of bizarre, let's talk about the Bills and Jags. I know we talked about this briefly before the show started. Kai, I know you had kind of a thought on what side you wanted to go here. The Jags are very quietly are one of the best teams in football. 13 victories this year, only 4 losses. And, of course, the Bills, they're always a crowd favorite just because of Josh Allen. But that line's really small in it.
Well, there's been a little bit of movement, I think, from a half to a one and a half, in that movement. But Buffalo this year has just – if Josh Allen is not throwing for 350 yards and running for 150, it seems like that's probably a little bit up. I don't think they're going to win. Jacksonville has been playing so much better and just pounding people. Vegas is scaring the hell out of me with this line because I really thought Jacksonville was going to be more like 3, 3.5, and it being 1. I've already hammered it for my max bet on Jacksonville.
You thought Jacksonville would be favored by 3.5 or catching 3.5?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I thought Jacksonville was going to be favored by 3, 3.5. I would love to hear a Case's number because I think Jacksonville wins this game by a touchdown, 2 scores. 9 points plus. And that's what scares me is the way the line is I thought it was going to be 3, 3.5 at least.
By the way, the Jags, an NFL best 12-5 against the spread this year, Case. So how many times were you on the Jags, and do you like them plus 1.5 here?
Quite a bit, I'd say. I definitely had them to win the AFC South, which was one of my best futures hit. I think I had plus 350.
Nice.
Yeah, I thought it was dead, too, after the way the Colts started. I mean, the Colts looked like absolute world beaters. That'll be interesting.
They're great, back next too. Year.
Yeah, I mean,
Indiana Jones.
Man.
Yeah, my first reaction was with Kai. I thought this would be a little bit higher. I guess the same disclaimer can be used. I do NFL similarly. I just put my immediate number, and then I haven't gotten to where I'll probably do it today, where I really dive in and put a more steadfast number in. But I came out Jacksonville minus 2.5 at first. I did bet some money line plus 104. However, not even remotely a big bet, just my very standard wager. Because I mean, it is hard not to be scared Josh Allen and James Cook. I mean, they're both did pretty incredible. So, it's possible that they just take over and win. But I mean, beyond them, the Bills have just not been that good. And even, I mean, I'm here to say I'm a huge Josh Allen guy. He came through for me in MVP last year. He's not been great this year. It's been week in, week out. He has some games where he's in that MVP form and some games where he just can't, seems like he can't throw at all. I mean, I feel like if it was a different quarterback, he would have gotten way much more grief. What was it, 2 weeks ago when they were playing the Eagles, just completely missed the wide open 2-point conversion pass. Like, there's been a lot of stuff like that this year with Josh Allen. So I feel like this line is giving Allen just a huge amount of respect, I think, because he's the most respected quarterback in the playoffs this year with no Mahomes. No Lamar, usually Lamar, Josh would be a coin flip. No Lamar, obviously. Tom Brady's been retired a little bit now. So, yeah, I think you're paying a big tax on Buffalo. And just with the way Jacksonville's playing and how complete they'd be, my initial reaction was leaning with Kai, and I kind of like Jacksonville.
I wonder if Josh is not a little banged up, too. I know he's had a couple of nicks and bruises towards the middle of the season.
The way he plays, you know he's banged up by week 17.
Well, and he plays his ass off, too. I mean, he doesn't slide. Yeah. He doesn't do anything, so it's kind of interesting. Another game that I think
you could also see some rain coming into Jacksonville this weekend because I want to bet the over 24.5, but that weather that's supposed to come through here Friday night into Saturday – could hit Jacksonville right at game time.
Thank you, James Spann. Houston Texans and the Steelers. This is an interesting game, first of all, because the Steelers limped in. They got in, and Rodgers obviously happy for him that he got in here. Here they are catching 3.5 against a Houston Texans squad that's won 9 games in a row.
Yeah, who's playing better than them?
I saw this ESPN shit. It just drives me crazy. If Mike Tomlin doesn't win a playoff game, should he be let go? Should he be fired? And I thought, that's ridiculous. But he has not won a postseason game in 10 years. Yeah, I'm like, really? Is that right? It's been 2016 since Mike Tomlin's won a postseason game. I'm thinking, that's interesting. Now he's gone over 500 for like 75 years in a row. I mean, he's always good for a 9-7 record or a 9-8 record. But what's your thoughts on that Texans-Pittsburgh line? I'm getting interested to see, did they blow their wad against the Ravens?
Hey, but if you go back and look at who Pittsburgh has had to play over the last 10 years, I mean, they have not had an easy road in the playoffs. No, I don't know off the top of my head, but they have not had an easy road once they got into the playoffs either.
And they've been on the road a lot. The road may be the key word this year. They do get this first game at home because of the division champ. But, boy, what a tough draw to get the Texans, who are just on fire.
Yeah, they really are. They're playing really well. Do you feel like – are you one of those guys, Kip, that feels like maybe the Steelers left it all on the table and they're going to come in? Something tells me they've got – dude, I mentioned this before, man. You're getting the Steelers plus points. I don't care who the hell they're playing. I loved them this past weekend against the Ravens. What a wild-ass game.
Yeah, I mean, they looked dead in the water at halftime. I didn't see anything. Everybody expected this game to be a classic Ravens-Steelers game, and it turned out to be very much that. But I don't know. I don't know how they continue to win, because I'm not very impressed with their team. I know they've got some inspirational guys, but when Kenny Gainwell is your number one running back choice, he was like a part-time player with the Eagles. They put him in. He was like the third best back they had. It's just hard for me to fathom that they find ways to win. And anybody talking about firing Mike Tomlin should go to their psychiatrist, because
Bengals will take him.
This guy is just, you know, even at halftime, he showed no frustration at all. They didn't get that last play of the first half. And he said, you know, well, it's a championship game. You got to play to win. We'll be all right. We'll be back. Mike Tomlin is just an amazing coach. And what the Steelers do is remarkable. But, gosh, I just don't see them beating this Texas team, who's just on fire right now. And their defense is just ferocious.
What are some other lines, Case, that you're looking at? We mentioned there's like more lines at like 3.5. I don't see any 2.5s, but a 3.5. It's just so close. You got a 1.5, a 1.5, a 3.5, a 3.5, a 3.5, a 3.5. And then, of course, you got the bowl games, which are 3.5 and 4. But is there any particular value you're seeing in any other games that I have not mentioned?
I mean, unfortunately, the NFL's so tight this time of year. There's nothing I bet huge. A few other things I bet. I bet the under in that Houston-Pittsburgh game, 39.5. I guess my weekly, just how did Pittsburgh do that? I agree with Kip. It makes no sense that they win every one of these games. The Ravens kicked their ass statistically. I think they had like 7.5 yards per play. They gained them by like 2 yards per play. They somehow missed the field goal. Then I saw a video before the game. The Steelers had priests walking around the field sprinkling the team.
Oh, yeah, sprinkling holy water.
Maybe that was the difference. I don't know. That being said, I did make it 3. We're now teetering to 3.5. There's no way I could lay. I couldn't lay 3.5 with Houston, but I haven't bet the side. I did bet under 39.5. Rodgers was amazing in the fourth quarter, but I don't know. We have a whole season long, you know, sample that says he's just kind of, you know, he's pretty amazing for being 42 or whatever, but he doesn't have much of an arm anymore, unless it's the fourth quarter with the game on the line against the Ravens, apparently. They don't have much explosion, so I kind of like under. They played the Browns a couple weeks ago, and the total was 34. Now we're up to 39.5 with the other best defense in the NFL, so I like the under there. I also bet under 47.5, and that's taking some money, actually, on Green Bay and Chicago. That's a really interesting game to me. I think Green Bay is way better than Chicago if they're healthy, but they just have not been healthy down the stretch. They've lost so many guys. I think people don't realize just how dire their injury situation is. That being said, they rested everyone in week 18. I think everyone that can play will play. So I think I'll probably – Chicago's taking some money now. I think I'll probably talk myself into a Green Bay bet before we get back together later. I have it so far. It's just the under for me. So under on those two games. I took a little bit of Jacksonville money line. And it wouldn't be I had a great NFL season. I don't know, something like 30 games above 500, picking every game in my column. I cashed in the super contest, which for a long time was the biggest men cash. So nothing to get too excited for. The biggest contest for years and years in Vegas, where Circa Millions has kind of taken it over. But I have an even better year if I could get the Chargers right. I bet against them all the time. They always still cover. I still bet a little bit against them again here. I laid 3.5 with the Patriots. I don't know. I'm still anti-Chargers. I feel like this is the matchup the Patriots wanted. You'd much rather be playing the Chargers, in my opinion, than the Bills or the Texans.
Stefanski, one of six coaches that have lost their jobs in the National Football League so far. Anyone see Joe Burrow give Myles Garrett that 23rd sack? No one's talking about that. Did you see him just lay down when he got remotely close?
Come on, give me.
Oh, I know he did. It was just as bad, but no one's saying a damn word about it. I don't even know if he touched Burrow. I think he tapped him on the back and it got the 20. And if you listen to Burrow before the game, he said, listen, if there's a situation where he's coming at me one-on-one, it's not like I'm going to try to run away from his ass in the last game of the season. So I was like, basically, you knew he was going to get his 23rd sack. And, of course, you got a guy that's undoubtedly one of the best defensive players in the world playing on one of the worst teams in football. They can never win.
It's a new age, Tony. It's 2026 where everything is given to people. You don't earn it.
You're right. You're right. No. Because Burrow, no one's talking about that. Burrow, if you go back and watch it, and he just went down. He just let me. It was like, and he just went down. And it was like, come on, man.
I will tell you, Friday may change some things, but I'm right there with Case on everything. That total, though, now he got at 47.5. It's down to 46. But if you are going to bet dogs, you better bet them now. My opinion, all those lines are coming down. I'd be shocked if the San Francisco line didn't get somewhere to around that key number, at least 4, if not 3. Houston's going to come down against Pitt. Pitt's going to have money come in on them. That line's going to drop as well.
All right. I got lunch plans, so I got to go.
So do I, ironically.
Yeah, I'll see you in a few minutes.
Yeah, but y'all's lunch plans kind of know each other if you're going to be, 10 or 15 minutes late. Yeah, there is a ton, before you go, Tony, there is a ton of great college basketball tonight, top 25, and then outside of it that we're looking at. There's, full slate of NHL. The NBA is not a full slate, and it's a little bit weaker, but, man, college basketball is here in all its glory, and I can't wait to get back tonight after my seventh graders middle school basketball game and watch some good college basketball and watch Tennessee not cover the 10.5 against Texas.
There you go. We'll be back coming up Friday morning at 10 o'clock on the Coastal Sports Network. We had some technical difficulties through Cloudflare, which is standard. It's the internet, kids. It's what happens. But we're going.
And I'm relieved it wasn't me because I couldn't make it happen.
See, it worked out good. We got you instead. I'll take Kip over Cloudflare any day.
Take Michigan tonight.
Cloudflare.
Whatever.
I know nothing about all this stuff.
I don't either. All right. Y'all have a great week, and we'll see you on Friday, 10 o'clock Central. Thank you, guys.
All right, guys.
See you, man.
You good.
See you, Kip. See you in a few minutes.
Yep. We're on our way.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.